You violated the law.
It's the Full Preview Podcast. UFC 301.
Okay, let's do this. This is the full preview for UFC 301. Coming at you the same day after the fights. I know very few of you are actually going to listen to this because this is so late and I want to apologize for that. Sometimes, like, life happens. I've been dealing with, like, that combination of the depression part of bipolar disorder with ADHD, so I haven't been very productive as of late. I'm very sorry about that. And also, like, some emergencies, but I won't stop the whining. I'll do this quick. I know you guys, some of you really like this, and I did all the research, so I'll try to get to the through the fights as fast as I can. I don't even have my resources up. But yeah, this is UFC 301 coming at you on today from Brazil. That's the thing. The main event is Pantoja, Alexandre Pantoja, defending his title, the flyweight title, against Steve Ercik, Astro Boy, who is, like, clearly not, like, the undisputed number one contender, but it's still a very interesting fight. But we'll get to that. Like, let's get into the fights. I don't want to waste your time, guys. I know the fights start in, like, 5 hours, so it is whatever. The opener is an absolute banger. We have Alessandro Costa versus Kevin Borjas in the flyweight division, the same as the main event. Let's begin with Costa. Costa is a stocky and powerful striker with a wide stance. He likes to feint steps, looking to jab or land brutal calf kicks. When it comes to power shots, he's all about the 2-3 and the 3-2 changeup, opting to go to the body often with the left hook. He can counter with them and also add that tight right hook, or he can close distance, either stepping into range or shifting with them and putting kicks at the end of combinations. His stance, athleticism and frame make it hard to take down, and he fights grips and takes angles well to deny them as well. But he can be surprised by reactive shots, particularly when throwing the right hand, squaring his hips. And he can look for takedowns mid-combination or grind from the clinch against the fence, where he's aided by his low center of gravity. His grappling can be hit and miss, as he has shown a solid base, balanced positioning, and vicious ground and pound when going for the finish. But from his back, he's not as good, but he has shown patience from close guard, controlling wrists, looking for to push on the hips or use butterfly hooks to elevate, but has also relinquished position from both the top and bottom rushing submission attempts, and he ends up on his back doing that. His physical strength and explosiveness can help him get back up to his feet or escape sketchy situations. His defense mostly relies on distance or sleeping the first shot to come back with counters, and has had a weakness to feints and straight shots that he has trouble reacting to, dampening his volume. On the other hand, we have Borjas, an aggressive combination puncher who fights behind a quick, sharp jab that serves as a foundation for his boxing game. Behind it comes an accurate straight right and a nasty left hook that he can land for big damage to the body. Nasty calf kicks are also a common follow-up to the jab. His good understanding of rhythm and shot selection allow him to find the mark with combinations, and even though his head movement can be a bit lacking at times, he does a good job of angling, parrying and smothering to keep himself safe. He has good variety when swarming, with kicks and flying knees to accompany his boxing game. A good mover on the outside, he's a capable jabber on the back foot and will try to reposition himself with good use of misdirections. A capable clinch fighter as well, will look for knees and elbows during breaks and is good at pushing opponents away to find shots. He's a solid defensive grappler with a strong wizard, is patient and will wait for the right spots to work his getups. But that patience can cost him because he can spend too much time on his back. Cardio and shins seem to be good. His biggest flaw are his lack of urgency on the ground at times, and he can get carried away with low combinations and can be open for counters. The opener, as I said, is a banger, with both action fighters looking to get back to the win column. What both fighters lack in defensive depth, they make up for in offensive potency. Despite their different styles, both guys go to the body and legs often to great effect. The thing to look out for are Borja's jabs. He will have a decent length advantage, and his sharp jab will allow him to keep Costa at bay. But also, Borja's tendency to concede the back foot, and move on the outside. While it can work for him, his defense can fall apart during prolonged exchanges if pushed back, and Costa has the power and aggression to do so. Borjas can also sell out for the check hook on the counter instead of relying on his jab and ability to reposition. This should be an exciting one, but I think Borjas will control the pace with his jab and superior footwork to win a decision. Next one is a lightweight bout between Ismael Bonfim and Vince Pichel. Let's talk about Bonfim. He's an ambidextrous counterpuncher. He has his best pressuring behind his jab, drawing reactions to put his counter game to good use. Powerful with both the left hook and the overhand right, Bonfim is also effective sleeping both ways to counter, which gives him versatility. The left hook can go to the body, and while the overhand is a bit too wide, he knows how to sneak it and land it well. Once he has his opponents against the fence, he's dangerous putting combinations together and looking for his dangerous knees, which he always looks for in the clinch as well. A decent kicker who will fill gaps with leg kicks, Bonfim has been susceptible to leg kicks himself. And while he will try to time same time counters or parry to return with a punch, he rather deal with kicks just backing up. His low stance allows him to defend takedowns well, and he's diligent about pushing the head down and fighting grips to get back up, but his wide right hand can leave his hips open for reactive takedowns. In the clinch, he also fights for grips and tends to turn his back to his opponent to attack the hands. He will look for big knees during breaks, as mentioned earlier. A solid offensive wrestler himself, he's good at this, as disguising takedowns, especially a knee tap that he throws behind his loopy overhand. Bonfim is very tough and decently conditioned. He can have trouble getting sloppy, extending his combinations, which can leave him open to counters or takedown attempts. And while he's a solid grappler, he can depend too much on the direct instructions from his corner and can be caught or reversed during transitions. You can catch many instances of Bonfim like goes to the ground immediately, looks to his corner, and that can be to his detriment. Let's talk about Vince Pichel now. I would describe him as an awkward, well-rounded fighter. Pichel mostly likes moving on the outside, changing stances, looking to poke with his lead hand to put combinations together or land heavy leg kicks. A lot of moving around with his hands down, looking to slip shots or take an angle. His punching mechanics are a bit wonky, but he carries decent power and is good at stringing combos to find decent landings. Front kicks and lead rear hands are also part of his arsenal. Pichel is a good transition fighter. Not a very effective wrestler, but he's very good at finding big shots in the clinch and during breaks, be it elbows, punches, knees, and he's a solid grappler and defensive wrestler with good scrambling abilities. He's very physically strong and well-conditioned despite his age. He's like 40, I think. Pichel's biggest flaw comes in his lack of tools to control the pace and ranges of the fight, so he often have to rely on his physical tools and well-roundedness to scrap in every phase instead of keeping fights where he has an advantage. He can also lack depth, being a jack of all trades, and can have trouble if stuck in certain phases against an specialist. This should be an exciting fight. Bonfim usually walks forward to draw up his counter opportunities, and Pichel will likely be happy to move on the outside and give him plenty to work with. This is a good test for Bonfim because Pichel is tough, conditioned, physical, and will compete everywhere. So if he gets tired like his brother did against Dalvey, Pichel could drown him, especially since he has tools everywhere to give him no escapes. That said, Pichel's janky mechanics and lack of tools to control space and pace makes me side with Bonfim to counterpunch him to a decision victory. Next is a flyweight bout between Diony Barbosa and Ernesta Karestaike. Diony Barbosa, former judoka, she's athletic and nimble on her feet and mostly fight behind jab feints and a quick and stiff 1-2, complemented by heavy kicks. She's decent at using tie-ups and clinches to defend when she's not able to use her lineal in-and-out movement. As a judoka, the clinch is a strong phase for her, being very good at finding takedowns in transition after her punches or ducking under incoming attacks, but has also adapted her judo throws to work against defense pretty well, and she's effective from overhooks and underhooks thanks to her footwork and timing. On the ground, she has a solid base from top position, exerting heavy pressure from half guard and three-quarter mount, and if she finds herself on her back, she will use butterfly hooks to either sweep or elevate her opponents and move on to pushing the hips to get up. Seems to be an armbar specialist, and she has a multitude of setups and variants to the technique to go for the submission, but she can relinquish position when looking for it. very inexperienced against high level opposition. She seems tough, but conditioning and resolve against fellow athletes remain a question mark. Karskaite, on the other hand, she is a long and very aggressive striker. She likes to walk people down with her hunch stance to put combinations together. She likes her straight punches, but despite her long reach, she's very rear hand heavy. Uppercuts and knees play to her usual height advantage, and she uses them well when opponents try to duck under her punches. She likes extending combinations, ideally looking to push foes back to track them with her long right hand. But she can square her stance when putting more than two punches together and will need to reset with her feet. Kicks at the end of combinations help with forcing resets and piling up damage. She doesn't move her head much, but she can slip shots here and there and will look to counter off her defensive movements. Very active in the clinch, looking for elbows, knees, and hooks, she can be out positioning there and could be more diligent about fighting grips. Her grappling ability remains an unknown at this level, but her conditioning and toughness seem to be elite so far. This is a very hard fight to get a read on, but you would expect this to be a classic striker versus grappler, while the meta has been moving more into the direction of strikers in the last few years. I still tend to favor the grappler in cases with so many unknowns like this one. Barbosa seems big and athletic enough to deal with Karasteki in the clinch, especially because of the Lithuanian lacking footwork and grip fighting on the inside. Karasteki is the superior striker, and the pace she pushes is no joke, so this is winnable for her, no doubt, but if I have to make a pick, I'm taking Barbosa by decision. We move on to a lightweight fight between Mauricio Huffy and Jamie Mullarkey. So Huffy is an athletic striker. He likes to stay in neutral space with his hands low, front foot heavy stance, looking to either land big single shots or look for counter opportunities. Powerful calf kicks are his main scorers from open space. He mostly uses distance management to avoid strikes, but once he has his reads, he will try to slip shots to counter, and he has good eyes inside the pocket. He packs big power from both hands and both legs and can surprise with his dynamism and immediate setups. Particularly finding hands from long distance to sneak big shots, like uppercuts of frames. But he lacks tools to score consistently and control the pace and direction of the fight. Despite being okay with taking the back foot, when he's pushed back, his defense can be exposed as there's a disconnect between his head movement and his footwork. Big and decently strong in the clinch, he can be passive, but he is fundamentally sound, and takedown defense has looked solid so far. Not a lot of data when it comes to grappling against this level of opposition, but he trains out of fighting nerves, which holds a decent amount of good grapplers, so maybe he's good there. Mullarkey is a long and awkward striker. He works at a long range looking for long straight punches and leg kicks. He likes to hide big stepping leg kicks with feints. He moves his head a lot on the outside, looking to weave his way into range to land combinations and bail out. And will also look to weave or slip off his own shots, anticipating counters. His head movement can take a dip when he's put on the defensive, aka he's better at defending when controlling the initiative instead of reacting. He has been vulnerable to same time counters, as he can keep his head on the center line at the moment of throwing his straight shots. Mullarkey is very aggressive in the clinch. He uses his levers well to work big elbows and knees and will attack the body consistently with knees and uppercuts against the fence. And this complements his long straight shots to the midsection that he uses at open space. Mullarkey is well conditioned and very tough. He has been hurt multiple times but has shown good recovery, and he usually gets better as fights go on. He's also a good opportunistic grappler with solid scrambling wrestling skills and with front headlock chokes, but he hasn't relied on those to win fights in the UFC for the most part. Mullarkey once again finds himself against a power puncher against whom he should have a process advantage. He has been in the wrong side of those lately, losing to knockout to Hakparas and Naimov, who are like dynamic strikers who just kind of vibe in fights, pretty much just like Huffy. He could outpoint the more inexperienced fighter from distance like he did against Prado, but I feel like he will need a more damaging approach against Huffy, because the Brazilian will get more dangerous if he gets to make his reads, and he can be very dangerous when he gets going. Huffy can catch the Australian for sure, but I haven't seen him beat anyone this consistent and experienced so far. So I'm picking the underdog here. Mullarkey wins a decision, likely involving some scary moments early. and we stay at lightweight because the next fight is between veterans of the sport, Joaquim Silva and Neto BJJ against Dracar Close. So let's begin with Neto BJJ, a powerful athlete. Silva likes to actively feint with his lead hand, gathering reactions to attack with short combinations, usually trying to set up a big shot at the end in the form of a winging punch or a thudding kick. While his hooks can be on the wide side, he has good timing and speed to land with authority, and he also had good uppercuts from both hands to catch dips and level changes. A solid jab from both stances, but the use of his jab can be inconsistent. He's also a solid counterpuncher. He puts his punching variety and power in both hands to good use, but he can lack head movement inside the pocket, so that's something to watch out for. He mostly relies on framing and distance as his main defensive layers, and while he tends to circle widely to reset, he has shown the ability to hit tight pivots in close to not be trapped against the fence. Physically strong, he's solid in the clinch, will look for knees and elbows off frames, and punches off breaks are a specialty of his. A sturdy defensive grappler, Silva has heavy hips, a solid sprawl complemented by a strong front headlock game. And in the case of being surprised with a takedown, he will look to quickly get up, blading his hips, pushing off the head, and he will work his get-ups even if he's put like completely flat on his back. Cardio can be hit and miss, usually getting tired by the third round, but he can fight well tired, he's tough and keeps looking for openings throughout fights. Opposite to him we have Close, a grindy, well-rounded MMA lab fighter. On the feet, Close is a switch hitter who can pressure well behind big kicks and jabs, looking for clinch entries. If put on the back foot, he can lead hook well off both stances. Clinching is his A game. He's very aggressive with dirty boxing and digging knees from a variety of grips, usually winning exchanges of single collar ties, and he can also grind for takedowns from body locks. And he's very effective when he has the body lock tripping the legs. Close is limited defensively as he doesn't move his head much and can eat too many shots during entries especially. But he smothers opponent well to keep himself safe with the clinches that we already mentioned. He shines during transitions, being surprisingly solid combination puncher for up close during breaks and being able to convert takedown attempts into clinch striking and vice versa. From top position, he's not very controlling but will look to attack ground and pound favoring rights. If Close is put on his back, he's very active, attacking with elbows from bottom and always looking to create space for his hips and look for get-ups. Conditioning and toughness are some of his best attributes. His biggest flaw is that despite his more insistent pressure that he has lately, he tends to fight wherever his opponent takes the fight, and he can fail to put stamp on rounds if he doesn't find big moments. This fight between lightweight veterans is flying under the radar in my opinion, but I expect it to deliver good action. Despite both guys being in the UFC for a long time now, and both being in the second half of their 30s, I think both might be at their best right now, kind of a like late career prime. Silva is the more powerful puncher and more dynamic athlete, and his well-roundedness will probably make it tough for Close to find an easy way to dominate the fight. What Close has going for him is scrappiness, willingness to push a pace without caring where the fight goes, while Silva will look like the cleaner, more effective fighter, maybe everywhere early. I expect the pace and constant clinching of Close to take a toll on him and his cardio. So I think Close takes a close, no pun intended, decision here. And we have yet another lightweight fight, this time between Elvis Brenner and Michibek Orolbay. So, Brenner, a wild all-rounder, a Diego Lima shoot the box fighter. Brenner can be janky, but he can compete everywhere and has a complete skill set. Wild punches that he likes to set up with throwaways and shifts in conjunction to kicks to all three levels make up for his long distance game. Brenner will always return fire when being hit and is a good kick checker, which makes establishing a pace on him harder than it might seem. He likes short hooks and combinations on the inside and will also look for elbows to crash into the clinch. Defense can be janky and inconsistent, but he mixes well his high guard with head movement to avoid big shots and keep himself in position to counter. A tricky clincher, Brenner will often change levels into body locks and can grind for trips against the fence, mixing footwork and physicality well. If denied takedowns, he will look for elbows, knees, and big punches over the top. A solid grappler, he likes posturing up to land ground and pound and use his strikes to move opponents for pass opportunities. He mostly looks for submission during transition, and we haven't seen much of his soft game in the UFC. A solid defensive wrestler, especially at open space defending leg attacks, but he has been surprised inside the clinch with sweeps and trips in open space. If taken down, Brenner will actively look to push off the hips to get it to walk to the cage and stand up from there. He's very well conditioned and insanely tough, despite being another case of a jack of all trades. Brenner has the advantage of being damaging and having the focus to go to the well time and time again when he finds something that's working. But he can have trouble dictating the phases and pace of a fight. Opposite to him, we have Orobai, a wrestler boxer who fights out of a tall stance. Orobai is constantly feigning his level change at open space and is very good at using it to set up strikes, in particular his straight right hand, which is quick and damaging. A good variety of kicks and a solid left hook round up his striking game. Orobai likes to pressure opponents against the fence without being overly aggressive, using well his takedown threat and using long strikes to push people back. Still a bit stiff on the feet, his lack of head movement has seen him eat big shots against a number of opponents, and it got him in trouble in his last fight. Orobai's A-game is his chain wrestling, and it is complemented by pressure and constant level, and that is complemented by his constant pressure and the feints of level changes. He's a resourceful wrestler, and even though he can get stuff on the first layer, if he gets any kind of tight body lock or a hold of a leg, he will stick like glue to his opponent. His top position game gives opening to get-ups, but he's content to land striking transitions and work his solid mat returns. His grappling is well adapted to work against the fence, and he can punish wall walks with wrist and leg rights to land big ground and pound. His shin is not granite, but his recovery seems to be very good. And if he can make 155 successfully, something that he hasn't tried since 2021, he will be a very big lightweight. Cardio in fights where he doesn't have full control of the action is a question mark though. Orobai looks to have a big edge in the process department here, as his striking pressure is well crafted to conduct him to his wrestling. And we've seen Brenner just take whatever fight his opponent gives him. That said, Orobai does not have experience against high-level opposition, and while his last showing against Medic was impressive, it has the caveat of being a short-notice fight against a striker preparing to fight another striker. I always favor the grappler in those situations. What we have seen of Orobai later in his career, even against lackluster opposition, is him being hittable, and that is not impossible to get up from underneath him. I think Brenner has the experience and a skill set to really test the Kyrgyz, particularly if the fight goes long. It could be very well be a grappling exhibition in which Orobai wins easily, but I need to see that first. So I'm picking Brenner to take over as the fight progresses and win via third round knockout. Strawweight up next, we have a fight between Karolina Kowalkiewicz and Yasmin Lucindo. So let's begin with Karolina. After what seemed like the end of her career, she was looking pretty rough at one moment. Karolina is having a late career resurgence, spending time at ATT, looking more coherent technically and revitalized physically. A volume kickboxer at range, Karolina mostly fights behind a sharp jab that she uses to score, disrupt and set up her right hand. She can change levels with her jab and can use it to draw reactions to counter. Her right hand is quite versatile, as she can put together solid 1-2s throw it to the body, and she can also surprise opponent doubling it up. A rear uppercut has also been an effective weapon and makes for a nice changeup as the follow-up to the jab, playing with the expectations of the straight right. Decent kicks at range on all three levels, and during breaks round up her long distance game. Of note is a very low leg kick that she uses to disrupt her foe's timing. Karolina can move her head proactively, but keeping her head on the center line remains one of her biggest flaws, and she's much better when controlling distance to keep herself safe. She's particularly vulnerable during exchanges, but tighter mechanics and her jab have made her safer inside the pocket. Decently strong and well-rounded, Karolina will look for single legs and clinches to either find striking transitions or take the fight to the ground. Her knees and elbows are still good weapons in close quarters, and her top control and scrambling are once again looking fine as of late. Conditioning is not as good as it was during her prime, but it remains a pretty good asset. And her toughness and resolve help her during long and tough fights. Opposite to her, we have Lucindo. Stocky and powerful, what Lucindo lacks in subtlety, she makes up for with power and some tricks up her sleeve. Already 20 fights into her pro career, despite only being 22 years old, Lucindo throws basically everything at full power. But her experience has granted her pretty good timing. Both with her right hand and closing exchanges with her wide left hook. Lucindo mostly likes to walk forward and throw counters at the very first sign of a punch coming her way, but she will use feints and powerful kicks if her opponent is not giving her much to work with. She can punch off kicks well and has a tricky spinning backfist to add variety. She will move side to side when throwing wide hooks, but defense is not a strong point and relies in her condition of being the tougher and bigger puncher during exchanges a lot. Not only a striker, Lucindo is very physically strong inside the clinch, and while not terribly active, she will take foes down from the body lock if allowed. From top, she either looks to pass with heavy pressure or to posture up, conceding position to land big ground and pound. From bottom, we haven't seen much as of late, but it seems like she's content to stall and remain safe. Despite her style, her cardio is a strong point, and so is her toughness. Her lack of adaptability and nuance are her biggest weaknesses. While Lucindo has some big physical advantages in this matchup, she has struggled with better put together fighters in the past. Carolina here looks like a less dynamic but more experienced test of what Lucindo faced in Jauregui in her UFC debut. Carolina has a good number of tools to trouble and frustrate the Brazilian, especially her jab, which will give her much needed control over the exchanges that happen. Sadly for her, I think the margins that she will have to walk through are too thin here. It is still a winnable fight, but one that requires too much of an outstanding performance, in my opinion. This would be closer if Lucindo's gas tank was worse, but it is not. She has a good gas tank, so I gotta pick Lucindo to win via knockout on the second round. After that, we have a featherweight fight between Joanderson Brichu and Jack Shore. So let's begin with Brichu. A freaky and weirdly well-rounded athlete, Brichu is a strange fighter to describe. Mostly about single shots on the feet, Brichu has big power, good eye for openings, and good triggers for counters despite his lack of coherent defense and wide punching mechanics. He packs big power in both hands and legs and can work well behind a big jab to set up follow-ups and counters. He can move his head when put on the defensive, but his head can remain static when getting into exchanges. Brichu is a surprisingly good wrestler early on fights, and even though he relies a big deal on his explosiveness and strength to make it work, he does have good finishes for his takedowns, and his drive paired with his punching threat allow him to easily drive opponents to the fence. From top position, he's very dangerous, and he has a very heavy base and can posture up to land damaging ground and pound with little space. But he's also like a legit BJJ black belt with good back takes and front chokes during transitions. For Brichu, his flaws, more than his lack of nuance or suspect cardio, mostly come in his decision making when he's tired. He carries power late into fights, and his wrestling is decently technical enough to still finish takedowns when he finds good entries, but he's too willing to go for bad takedown attempts or not push his advantages on the feet. That said, Brichu keeps being dangerous, both with chokes and punches when fights go long, and he's very tough and blessed with a sturdy shin. Opposite to him, we have Jack Shore. The former bantamweight is a smooth operator in every phase of the game. A slick striker, Shore sets most of his offense behind his jab moving forwards, coupled with snappy kicks and a sharp counter right hand. Shore is always gathering reactions with his lead shoulder feint, and actual jabs, looking to draw counters to fade back and come back with his right hand or to put tricky combinations together, which can involve hand fighting and shifting. His good footwork complements both his defense and offense, and he's good at catching clinches defensively, quickly using pivots on the inside to remain safe. His defense relies too much on leanbacks and clinches though, and he can be vulnerable when standing tall, especially during prolonged exchanges. Shore is strong in the clinch and looks often for elbows during tie-ups, and he has a strong transition game afforded to him by all the defensive glitching that he does. He has good takedowns from body locks and can also counter kicks to transform those in takedowns. Takedown defense is not impenetrable, especially if opponents get on his hips, but he's a very active guard player with butterfly hooks and works hard to create space to stand up. In his only fight at 145, he looked deceptively physical and quick, and his cardio held up well grappling against a larger opponent. Other than some issues with his boxing defense, his biggest problem is an over-reliance on his transition game, sometimes needing success in multiple areas to make his game completely like click. While this might seem to some like a physical mismatch, and Brichu clearly holds key athletic advantages, I think some are underselling Short's own physicality and skills. He will need to walk tight margins here, as Brito packs huge power, is a strong wrestler, and is suffocating from top. But other than an early KO, Short has skills to compete everywhere and should have a sizable advantage in the striking, especially if the fight goes past the first round. An early KO or sub by Brito are very possible, but I'm taking my gamble with the underdog here, and I'm picking Jack Short to win a decision. We have a middleweight bout to open up the main card, and it's between Paul Craig and Caio Bohalio. Let's begin with Craig. A long and awkward kickboxer on the feet, Craig is surprisingly mobile, and most of his offense consists on kicks that he can set up with short combinations or behind feints. Not much of a boxer, but he has stiff straight punches that help him maintain the long distance he likes, and has more pop than he gets credit for. Defense relies a lot on length and backing up. While Craig moves well, he retreats on straight lines most of the time, and his head stays in the center line during any kind of exchange. Not any kind of technical wrestler, but he does have decent level changes for his stature and can finish bodylock takedowns and double legs if the entry is good enough. In case of his takedowns failings, he's also a solid clinch fighter with knees and elbows, and he's also not afraid to pull guard off a strong overhook. While he can defend takedowns somewhat competently when he tries, he's content to go to his back to play guard. He moves people well from bottom with butterfly hooks, can transition to the legs, but he's at his most effective using his quick hips to hunt for the triangle armbar changeup. He has been stalled and hit with ground and pound for long periods by fighters with solid base that do not give him much to work with, especially if stacked against the fence. That said, he's an all-around solid and agile scrambler, and his top game is solid with good passing, control, and consistent ground and pound, being particularly dangerous with elbows if he gets to posture up. Cardio and chin are solid, his striking defense and his willingness to play from bottom are his biggest flaws. And his opponent is Bohalio, yet another big and dynamic athlete from Fighting Nerds. I wrote this before they scrapped the Jan Silva fight, by the way. He's like the poster boy of Fighting Nerds, Bohalio. He's a well-rounded fighter who likes to move around on the outside from a bouncy southpaw stance. Bohalio likes to use the jab, right hook, changeup a lot. But he also likes the 1-2 and mix it up his kick variety to find openings. Usually low level early on fights, Caio can take his time to make his reads, but he usually ups the volume as the fight progresses. The check hook is a big part of his game, as he likes to draw people in with the long distance he sets, or likes to jab and wait for a response, hiding behind his lead shoulder to fire the lead hook. But he can also counter well with a short straight left in close. Well-rounded and not afraid to mix it up, Caio is not a technical wrestler, but timing and physicality do a lot of the heavy lifting to help him get fights to the ground, and he usually finds his best entries on the counter. Bohalio will look for clinches as a change of pace or defensively, but he doesn't do much inside the clinch, to be honest. He can land solid knees and attack during breaks, but his footwork inside is something to be desired, and he can be inactive. From top position, on the other hand, Caio is a legit grappler with great passes during transitions and good control afforded by his heavy hips, balance and tricky grips, often using wrist control, and while he can lose position from mount, he's a solid and quick scrambler and is very solid from the back control. Bohalio's lack of urgency and depth to his different areas of comfort are his biggest weaknesses, as he's very, very physically gifted, and his chin cardio and resolve all seem to be up there as well. Bohalio has clear paths to victory here, as he should have solid advantages on the feet, and if he gets to top position, if Craig is really aggressive on the feet and gets Kayo against the fence, he could overwhelm him with strikes or find takedowns, but he needs to be careful closing the distance. I feel like Bohalio can win this one from top position, but I get the feeling that he will be smart, between quotes, and not risk it with Craig's guard, as MMA fighters tend to buy on narrative more often than not. So I'm thinking that Bohalio outpoints Craig on the feet for a decision victory. We stay at middleweight and we have a fight between Michel Pereira, Demolidor, against the duelist, Ihor Pochera. Let's begin with Pereira, a meme lord who maybe is in rehab. Powerful and dynamic, Pereira has some skills in every phase but mostly relies on tricks instead of fundamentals, and his game lacks cohesion. He has a good jab and left hook but has failed to use them to control the pace of fights in the past, though a newfound consistency with the straight right to the body might be doing a lot for him right now. He mostly fights on the outside, trying to move people into big shots. A solid front snap kick helps him with controlling distance, and adding attrition just like the straight right to the body that I already mentioned. Strength and physicality help him defending takedowns, and he's a solid top control grappler, but he can struggle against chain takedown attempts and defaults to start from the bottom looking for opportunities to explode to get back up. His biggest issue is that he gasses with all his big movements even when fighting at a medium pace. He's decent at fighting tired, and he tends to rely more on basic tools as he tires, but the lack of depth to his game shows in those situations. How his cardio holds up now that he moved up to middleweight remain to be seen, having had two early KOs so far in the weight class. His defense is also unstructured. He can move his head and his feet well here and there, but he's very inconsistent with it. With chin, tough and decent resolve, Pereira has a lot going for him, but the lack of depth, despite his many tricks and him failing to pace himself, what it is what has cost him in the past. Opposite to him, we have the duelist. Pochera, a southpaw kickboxer, he likes to poke at range with his rear leg, mostly as a roundhouse to the legs and body. Effective at parrying his rear hand with his rear kicks, Pochera sneaks a good amount of straight lefts from open range, and he will occasionally change levels to the body with it. He feints, jabs, and fine hands looking to set up his feet to fire combinations with his hands. While his mechanics can be a bit janky, his combinations are well put together, and he likes to weave or pull back after two or three shots to come back with counters. And he has power in both hands. Even though Pochera proactively moves his head after his own strikes and seems to have good eyes to see shots coming when he has initiative, his head movement can be lacking at open space. This is somewhat alleviated by him managing distance well and him parrying and fighting hands actively. He will also level change for clinches and single legs and uses both to disrupt the timing of his opponent, control the pace of the fight, and find strike in transitions. Especially uppercuts off the single leg was a very good look in his last fight. Not much of his grappling has been seen in the UFC, but his ground and pound has looked very heavy and accurate. Cardio and chin seem to have translated well, dropping from light heavyweight to middleweight. His biggest flaw is his lackluster defense at range, especially early in fights. Pereira has looked unstoppable with two early KOs after moving up to 170, while the duelist also had a successful debut, dropping from 205 to win a convincing unanimous decision. Pereira comes from stopping another southpaw former light heavyweight in Oleksiyshuk, and a lot of people are expecting him to repeat the trick here. The straight right to the body could once again be key here for the Brazilian, as Pochera's constant parrying can leave his body exposed. That said, I feel like the Ukrainian also has things going for him. Pereira has looked pedestrian when he doesn't end things quickly or has to exchange constantly, and his tricks become less effective as fight goes on. He will also be fighting a naturally bigger guy for the first time since moving up a weight class. And Poirier's level of activity coupled with the soft power, I think, gives him a good chance to pull off the upset. And I'm picking the upset. I'm picking Poirier to win a decision. We move up one division to light heavyweight. We have a bout between Anthony Smith and Vitor Petrino. Late career Smith is weird. While he probably found his technical consistency at 205, polishing his jab and kicking game, coupling it with solid footwork and making good use of his underrated opportunistic ground game, it is the decision-making and mental game of Smith that lead us to believe that there's not much of his prime in him. As mentioned, from range, Smith is solid. He has an active sharp jab. He can use it to set up his solid kicks to all three levels. He has reverted as of late in relying a lot on his high guard as mean of defense. But not only is his ability to take shots seemingly compromised, but so is his confidence when he starts absorbing power. Smith still packs power himself, and his counter left hook and his long right hand cannot be dismissed. Once a potent clinch fighter, Smith is still dangerous with knees and elbows, but he lacks physicality against the bigger, stronger dudes of the division. And this has also meant that he has to rely on technical trips from the clinch to get fights to the ground. As mentioned earlier, Smith is a legit grappler, and while he can be stuck under fighters with heavy top pressure that play it safe, he's good at attacking from his guard or generating a space to turtle and get up. From top, he's a good fundamental player with heavy control, decent output of ground and pound, and his back take and rear naked choke are some of the best in the division, if we're honest. Conditioning and toughness seem to still be there, but any drop in confidence makes his game a lot less effective. And opposite to him, we have Petrino, a very athletic and powerful fighter. This guy seems to still be finding his identity as a fighter, and as a result of that, he has been stuck as this like all-rounder with shallow but competent skills in every area. But those are like obviously enhanced by his physical traits. On the feet, he tends to be low volume and likes to operate at neutral. He doesn't have many tools to score consistently, but he will jab and leg kick decently while he tries to set up his power punches. Petrino has a predilection for the left hook, either as a follow-up to the jab or as a check hook counter after drawing shots and hiding behind his lead shoulder. Effective shoulder feints and a good stance help him a lot with not giving initiative completely away and staying safe and ready to counter, but he has been vulnerable to leg kicks because of his front foot heavy approach. He can move his head a little bit, but during longer exchanges he defaults to pull back and there are openings to exploit there. Petrino gets most of his takedowns from the body lock, be it at open space reactively or driving people to the fence and grinding them. And while he's not a very technical wrestler, he has a few tricks, solid ideas, and his tremendous strength also help him to finish a lot more takedowns than you would expect. From top position, Petrino is very heavy and mostly looks to pass from half guard into the arm triangle. The few times he has had to scramble, he has looked competent and definitely not one of those big guys that crumble immediately from bottom position. Cardio might be suspect, but he has shown the ability to fight well tired and carries his power late into fights. Shin seems to be more than fine until now. Petrino's flaws come in the form of lack of experience, not pushing his winning conditions hard enough. There is a small chance Smith gets it done here. He still packs power and is still an opportunistic, dangerous grappler. If anything like funky happens in the ground, and he also has like the technical edge that might conduct him to outpoint the Brazilian for a decision. That said, what makes this such a bad matchup for him, other than the physical disparity, is the ability of Petrino to compete everywhere with him. This is yet another fight where the less athletic fighter will have to play like a margins game, and Smith won't have an easy way out here. It's not like Smith gets a takedown and wins immediately, or he can pull guard. Petrino can compete everywhere. That's the problem here. Petrino's big power and steady improvements on the feet, coupled with him being one of the fighters in the division with the ability to just stay on top of Smith safely, make this one a very easy choice. I'm picking Vitor Petrino to get a knockout on the second round. And with that, we move to the co-main event. We have Jonathan Martinez against the GOAT, Jose Aldo, making a comeback here in front of Brazil. Let's begin with Martinez, an aggressive southpaw kicker. Martinez has always been solid, but it seems like he's putting it together as of late. Martinez is at his best when he's pressuring behind his power kicks that he throws to great effect at all three levels. And his solid footwork, feigning and timing allowed to land a good amount of them with little to no setup. Martinez is one of the best inside leg kickers from open stances in the sport right now, and that's a weapon that not a lot of fighters are equipped to deal with. A solid jab from range and his ability to counter kick means Martinez has an effective and well put together minimalistic approach. When he puts people against the fence, Martinez can let his hands go more and also put use to his brutal knees that he can throw from range without grabbing clinches, and also work as a great counter. Martinez has been susceptible to combinations in the past as he doesn't move his head much, but his combination of backing up, high guarding and framing have been helped a great deal lately by his ability to pivot and deny longer exchanges. His pressure helps with his takedown defense as he usually fights hands and angles before a wrestling exchange even begins, but he also has a solid sprawl if he needs to. Inside the clinch, Martinez is strong, and not only his powerful knees makes an appearance there, also elbows and sneaky takedowns from body lock. A solid scrambler with good fundamentals, Martinez's best qualities as a grappler are his calmness and his commitment to fighting grips before a dancing position. Cardio and toughness are very good assets for him. His lack of nuanced boxing, especially when it comes to defense, remain his biggest weakness. Weaknesses. Excuse me. And we move to Aldo. What can be said about Jose Aldo other than speculating where he's at? He's only 37 years old, like obviously not any young, but we've seen like a lot of fighters fight later into careers to some good results, and Aldo is another example of that. The 39 fight veteran has given us some of the best late career performances of all time, but also some head scratching and sketchy moments, be it in the form of inactivity or big lapses in reaction time. At his best, Aldo is one of the best boxers the sport has ever seen. Not a super nuanced combination boxer, but Aldo possesses a brilliant jab to control exchanges, and his understanding of changeups and big power allow him to put very effective short combinations together. When I say one of the best boxers, I also talk about defense. With masterful footwork, Aldo will pivot and innate exchanges in the blink of an eye, and he will mix proactive head movement, footwork, static and active guarding to some of the best displays of defense mixed martial arts has been graced with. A leg kicking phenom himself during his prime, later in his career his kicking output saw a considerable drop off, but Aldo turned instead into one of the best kick shakers in the sport. And the defensive praise doesn't stop there, because his legendary takedown defense is such for a reason. Excellent at feeding the single leg to limp out, Aldo's footwork and great fighting make taking him down a tall order. And on top of that, he's also an athletic freak with excellent hips that can change directions impressively quick. So what's left of the best of Aldo? That's the hard part to know. We've seen late career Aldo fail to defend takedowns, react badly to strikes, just go long stretches without throwing anything at all. But we also seen late career Aldo impeccably defend the leg kicks of Pedro Munhoz while boxing him up, outkick Peter Yan for rounds after being hurt, defend every takedown from Merab Dervishvili, and more. I think the one thing that has had the biggest impact in the late Aldo is the reaction time, which means he relies a lot on having the initiative to correctly predict his opponents instead of reacting last seconds with his reflexes. That and his confidence in his cardio, which probably explains the frustrating low volume at times. If this was anything resembling prime Aldo, this would be a very easy pick. I'm not saying that prime Aldo wins against everyone, but this seems like actually like a bad matchup for Martinez. Because he brings almost nothing that Aldo haven't seen before. And on top of that, Aldo's styles of Aldo's style of offense seemed perfect to punish the defensive reactions of the American. So now we have to play hypotheticals. How is Aldo gonna look and how much he needs to win this one? Aldo's boxing, while not as ferocious as it once was, seemed to still be there. And it was less than 3 years ago that Aldo dealt with the long, rough front, the kicks of Pedro Munhoz just fine. I think kickers are always kind of a bad matchup for all fighters, just because it gets harder and harder to take big kicks as an injured, shop-worn fighter. So Martinez's pick here makes perfect sense. That said, I like the footwork, the kick checks, and the boxing, especially to the body, to punish the high guard of Martinez. I think Aldo pulls this one off, maybe for the last time. So I'm picking Jose Aldo by decision. And it's time for the main event. The champion, Alexander Pantoja, defends his title against Steve Erceg, Astro Boy. So, yeah, Pantoja versus Erceg is certainly a compelling matchup. Despite Erceg not being the most deserving contender at the moment, the Australian has shined in the UFC so far, debuting against the ranked Dvorak and then going on to win his next two fights, the last one by brutal knockout. But I think a lot of people like aren't aware of how competitive the Dvorak and Costa fights were. Like, yeah, I mean, you can say like clear wins for Erceg, but it's not like he's absolutely watching people. I don't think so. While Pantoja has been in tougher fights, like very grimy fights, the level of opposition that he has faced, not only as champion, but in route to a hard-earned title shot, was for sure higher. Erceg in this fight will be the cleaner boxer, and he might even have a power edge in here. His mechanics are both like relaxed and tight in the best way possible, that he just like flows into shots, but his punches has like very concise arcs to them. He puts meaningful combinations together that he throws at a hair trigger. Erceg is also responsible with his hand positioning while punching, and will move his head after combinations or reactively. He does have some vulnerabilities though. Erceg usually enters the pocket standing tall, and when he's not moving his head, which is often, he depends on his hands to cover his shin. That he tends to leave up there hanging. He also retreats from exchanges a lot, and this has leave him vulnerable to leg kicks and right hands, since he tends to drop his left hand when he's retreating. Those are relevant against the champion, since Pantoja likes to meet foes to the body, dropping his level on entries, and come back with the right hand upstairs. And he's tricky with his double right hands when pursuing fleeing opponents. Pantoja is also no stranger to punishing retreats with big leg kicks. Pantoja needs to be careful about being too low in close against the challenger though, as Erceg is no stranger to knees and uppercut that are obviously benefit from his lanky frame. But my friend Anton has said that Pantoja has a very good radar for knees. And that's a very interesting thing, because yeah, Pantoja like drops levels a lot, stays low, and he's like not super short for the division, but he doesn't fight very tall. And you rarely see him like eating like huge knees. Like you saw Royval, who is very good at knees, like not landing anything. When it comes to knees, the attrition game will also be interesting here. Pantoja, who has gotten tired pushing a crazy pace in his last two fights and still managed to win the fifth round on both occasions, I think he needs to be careful with Erceg knees to the body if they like exchange a lot in the clinch, as the Australian will look for them constantly and he will probably find them. Erceg, on his part, hasn't seen his legs punished as often as you would expect, and the leg kicks of Pantoja could play a role if the fight goes long. When it comes to grappling, it gets very interesting, as both guys are fantastic scramblers. Erceg might look like a better mat wrestler at times, but he also ends up in scrambles very often, and he trusts his grappling instead of committing to fully defending takedowns at times. Pantoja, for all the crazy scrambles that he has been on, I think he's the best control grappler that Erceg has faced so far. I feel like Pantoja also holds an advantage when it comes to cage wrestling, being versatile wrestling to the legs and also from the clinch. I think Erceg likes to use his grappling and clinches to alleviate chaos when he needs a breath. And while I think his cardio is great and probably holds up over 5 rounds, I think that he needs to like mentally reset and collect himself when fights are getting ugly. We saw a little bit of that against Dvorak and against Costa. And Pantoja, on the other hand, will keep going through the fire, and he's already been there a number of times. Lastly, I feel Erceg relies too much in his half guard getups from bottom, and I think that Pantoja is like an excellent passer from those positions. And he also, like, we've seen Erceg like in guard, like just trying to like get up kicks and push off defense, and I think Pantoja is very dangerous with ground and pound from those positions. So yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people are overlooking a lot of advantages that Pantoja has in this matchup. This is not to discredit Erceg. I can see it if you see Erceg boxing and you say like, oh, he's going to lead up Pantoja up. But what if he doesn't? Like, I feel like Pantoja is like wild, but he's like weirdly a smart striker. He doesn't get credit for that. And also, I think the power is underrated by Pantoja. Yeah, man. I think the grappling and pace will be too much for the challenger. Erceg be a finish early or even like a boxing-based decision is like completely fine as a pick. I think it's like very hard to predict as a fight. If I'm made to pick, I think Pantoja gets to the back eventually, and he gets the submission in round 3. And that would be the pay-per-view. I hope this is like kind of quick. You guys are able to listen to this. I'm so sorry again, guys. I'll be more productive from here on. No more excuses, no more whining. I'm just embarrassed that I didn't get this podcast out in time. So yeah, I'm sorry about that. I'll do better next time. Fights to look out for in this. The opener, Costa versus Borjas, is going to be very exciting. Ismael Bonfim versus Vince Pichel. Action guaranteed. Hoofy versus Mularkey. I think Mularkey is like a would fold to Hoofy, because Hoofy, I feel like, needs someone to put volume out there to be an exciting fighter. And he's going to deliver. I think a lot of people are overlooking Joaquin Silva versus Dragar Klose. I think both guys are looking very good as of late. And especially Klose, who I used to hate for being like super boring, into bullshit, like trying to win lame decisions. He's very aggressive now, and I kind of love it. Brenner versus Oralby. I'm not sure if it's going to be a great fight action-wise, but it's very compelling. And yeah, Brito versus Jack Shore is very good. Pereira versus Pochera is going to be fun. And then you have the top two fights that are great, fantastic. So yeah, I mean, I understand some people being kind of mad at this being a pay-per-view. I feel like I understand if some people feel like this is kind of weak. But I feel like we have a lot of good fights, and I give all the respect to both Pantoja and Erceg. I'm very excited about this main event. The return of Aldo means a lot too. Just because I just like love watching Jose Aldo doing his stuff more than like personally like him as a person, because I probably don't. but yeah, watching Jose Aldo is kind of special, so when he does this stuff very late into his career, it's so fucking great to watch. So yeah, that's the pay-per-view, guys. Thank you so much for the very few of you that are going to listen. I'm very sorry. I'll do better next time. I'll be doing a recap on Monday, I think. Catch you guys later. See you on Twitter commenting the fights. Bye.